G'day, I'm Carlos. Here on FNR, we're excited to announce that you can now become one of us. That's right, you can be part of the huge voice of football in Australia by becoming an FNR member today. If you love this game and you love FNR's uncompromised and passionate whole-of-game coverage, you can become one of us by going to footballnationradio.com and click on the Become a Member link. By being an FNR member, you'll be able to enjoy the massive member benefits on offer. But above all, you can stand side by side with the other 3.1 million people who are actively involved in our game in this country. Be the voice of football. Become an FNR member today.
Football Extra with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome everyone to a wonderful Wednesday. You're on FNR Football Nation Radio, Australia's first and only 24-hour radio station dedicated to the beautiful, beautiful game of football. I'm Carlos Alberto Diego and this is Football Extra, our daily football show with news and more. Today on Football Extra, it is NPL Wednesday, but to kick us off on NPL Wednesday, we've got a special guest in the studio. It's Tom Callis. Tom was the interim chairman of the AAFC until July 2017, but is a corporate global strategy and services professional. Good morning to you, Tom.
Good morning, Carlos. Good morning.
I mean, you're so well dressed too. I mean, you've really embarrassed and shamed us all here at FNR.
I've got to go straight to the office after this.
So you got a real job.
The road. Yes,
you
indeed.
You got a real job. But look, I've seen your name around mm-hmm. a lot since the establishment of the AAFC. Congratulations on the wonderful work that Robbie Cram and your team have done with this organisation. You've come such a long way in a short period of time. Can you tell us about the journey? Before we get into the article you wrote yesterday, the insightful article that everyone's talking about in football today on the website there, I want to know the background of the AAFC and how that's evolved in a very, very short period of time to be quite a powerful little
stakeholder group.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Yes, indeed. Look, fundamentally, it really kicked off on the 28th of February last year, when the FFA announced that they've just suddenly realised that the financial model for the W League and the A League was unviable. A, they couldn't expand. B, they couldn't implement what they wanted to implement. They were cutting funding for organisations like futsal, for instance, and other add-ons and so forth. And we knew from many, many years ago that the model was flawed. And we knew the impact that it had, not only at the grassroots level, but across a lot of tiers of the game. We'll go into that a little bit about that later, of course. And so that impetus was really, it brought out in the open what we all knew. And we felt that this was a great opportunity to get organised, mobilised, I should say, and stake the case. Because if we didn't get involved at that particular juncture, we would have missed, I think, the boat in many, many ways. So that was the formative reasons why we all got together. And, of course, we contacted all the clubs internationally. I had grown men crying, presidents of clubs crying, two in particular, interstate, because they felt that suddenly there's going to be something that might change the way things are heading. There's an atrophy in infrastructure across Australia, which people haven't realised yet. And so this talk about coming together, creating a second division and getting the focus away from just a flawed model at the top tier, we had to try and educate people that there's repercussions in that flawed model across the whole ecosystem of football. And if we don't change it, it's going to keep on impacting us. And the biggest gorilla in the room, and particularly for me, it's always been the question of infrastructure. So that was the real impetus. And if I can digress, I was pleased last week when John DeLuca from the PFA came out and explained that what he termed the infrastructure deficit, which is what basically the same thing we've been saying, is a big concern for all tiers of the game, particularly the top tier as well. And so what we've been trying to drive in the last year is an education process, but getting organised, getting subcommittees, getting consulting groups within our group. They're all volunteers, of course. Even the current board, they're all volunteers. And it's come together quickly because we've implemented it exceptionally well. Mm-hmm. Like most things in life, talk, opinions, everyone's got one. But it's the implementation process. You guys have done a stellar job in setting up a 24-hour, fully football radio service in many ways. You've implemented it very, very well. So it's not just an idea anymore. Mm. That's the same thing we did as well. So we had to have good implementation processes and skills, and we've done that. We are where we are in football in Australia is because we haven't implemented well. And although the modelling is flawed, we're still doing a good job in implementing that particular model in its own right. So we came together last year and we established an interim committee. And we wanted a national organisation, of course, represented equally on democratic principles across Australia. We didn't really want just Victoria and South Wales dominating an organisation like they've always had in football historically. So we were at pains to stress that it had to be one vote, one club, one seat from each state being represented as the director in our new AAFC board. And the most refreshing part about it was we had a great ally in FIFA and the AFC in many ways, because there's been a massive change, as you're aware. The Blatter years have gone. The Infantino era openly, I think, is a more of a cleaner, more governance-centric organisation. It is what it is. I mean, they're trying to do a lot more, of course. It does take time. The Swiss government is actively involved in a lot of the reforms that are happening in FIFA. So a lot of the key personnel in FIFA in Zurich now are actually ex-government employees or appointees. So we tapped to that vein, and we got a great hearing, of course, great support from day one, and we are here where we are today.
When you first started, was your intention to just be an advocate for that your level of football, was second division in mind, what was your driver?
The main driver was the actual reform process itself. For us, this was a vehicle to get the reform process tabled publicly in many ways as well, and to start the education process, because if people didn't understand that the system was inherently flawed, no matter what we would do, we'd just kick the can down the road, as I've said before, and because we've got this penchant in Australia to try to design unique systems, particularly in the football sphere, which just amazes me. 4 years ago in Victoria, they wanted to implement this aberrant MPL model. I don't know if you recall, which was not any different to anything else in Australia, but it was unique amongst – look, it was touching upon these just incredible, unique flabbergasted. It would have meant the catastrophic end to club football in Victoria. We would have become all youth clubs developing, designing players or whatever for the top tier. And they'd lost the plot. Clubs and football across the planet has become what it is because of club culture and developing strong clubs. Now, that's across the entire footprint of football, not just the top tier. The elements of promotion relegation, the elements of transfer fees, they're intricately woven into the success of football. So when you've abrogated those out of the game and you've created this unique model, it has phenomenal repercussions. So in Victoria 4 years ago, they were trying to design a new MPL system because it had to tie into what they were trying to design up the top. We had to take the Federation to court, slapping with an injunction, pushing to insolvency by withholding our funding for the Federation. And it cost us, all our clubs, all the top-tier clubs in Victoria, then 65, $220,000 to do that. We compromised. We formed the system of the MPL we have today with the key tenet of promotion relegation in it. So this year, clubs got promoted from community clubs into the MPL. MPL clubs got relegated into the community clubs, which is part and parcel of key tenets of football. Queensland's doing the same thing as well this year, if you notice, in their MPL system as well. So the AAFC was, yes, formed to lobby and to try and educate on the effects this model has on football overall, not just MPL but community clubs as well, obviously. And in so doing, we want to try and educate people as well. But for me, the fundamental gorilla in the room is the question of infrastructure. What people haven't realised is the A-League model actually encourages the atrophy of facilities across Australia. Because if you haven't got ambition, if you haven't got the mechanism to promote clubs that want to get promoted, to invest, to lobby councils or governments and so forth to build the facilities from 500 to 3,000, from 3,000 to 7,000, which is part of the normal football culture around the planet. What happens is if there is no mechanism for that promotion, for instance, for ambitious clubs, facilities will start atrophying because people will leave the game. They won't build artificial grounds or pavilions or whatever. And then gradually, the next generation will find less than what we have. And so it's imperative that our generation doesn't receive what we've received from our previous generations. We've got to build hard assets, boutique stadiums, facilities. So this is, for me, the second division, the linking of the tiers, moving to the global standard. It's about protecting what's in jeopardy, because people think because we've got huge participation metrics today, they're going to remain so in 25, 30, 40, 50 years from now. No, it's not, because the other codes are far better organized than we are. There's a land war out there. People can see it, sense it. AFLX, rugby's getting it, obviously, in New South Wales and Queensland. If we don't get organized and protect what we have in our facilities footprint, it's not going to be around forever. The next generation of kids must receive hard assets from us. Mm. And it's imperative that we start working at that nationally. Mobilization plans. It's not just the imprimatur for this federation to do that. It's everyone's job to work to a coordinated plan. And so that to me is the fundamental concern that I have about the game. So unless we change and move to the global standard, that key plank, the gorilla in the room that I call it, is going to get atrophied. Our participation metrics will not remain where they are, because new generations will get exposed to, you know, AFL women's, AFL boys, wait for age in the rugby, which makes them more safer, so it will attract more kids. They'll get better organised and lobby their councils and the governments better than we certainly have in our game. So gradually, we will not keep this dominance we have in participation metrics. We've got to use it now to lobby, to raise the capital, to imbue ambition for the clubs that want to get promoted. And this is why in our championship modelling, we've got facilities as a key plank. You must have a 3,000-seat stadia to apply for a second division licence. Mm. Okay. That is to drive that key metric to clubs to grow their facilities, expand their footprints across Australia. There's 700 clubs in Australia, 700. I want and I desperately love to see every single club have its artificial ground, have a small boutique stadium of 400, 500 people. And as the population grows in Australia, we're not going to be 24 million people forever. In Melbourne, we're 4 million today. We'll be 8 million probably 15, 20 years from now. Where are these kids going to play? Hmm. If we don't build these assets now, where are they going to play? It's very hard to do it later. It's very expensive to do it later. And that's what we're trying to do with AFC. Hmm. It's, yes, linking the tiers, but for me, the key plank is the infrastructure piece below that.
It's a fantastic motivation to get this right, Tom. Yeah. I think you've articulated it beautifully. I think that's part of the education process too. Of course, people look at the problems in the game, but they don't understand the underlying problems, not only for now, but for down the track. And as you said, there's no guarantee that the numbers will be there down the track to make the case that correct. We can make now.
Correct.
We've never had more kids playing the game correct. Ever. We've always had a bigger number of kids playing the game. But right now, we can arm ourselves with this data.
Yes.
When we go to local council, when we go to state government, when we go to federal government, we have the data, we have the power, but we've got to mobilise it, like you said. Or we've got to realise it first. And that's what you're doing right correct. Now. You're making people understand correct. That that's where we are right. Because
yeah.
subconsciously, no one's really picked this up.
Yeah.
But certainly a really, really important part. I'm really glad that that's the thrust behind the AFC too. Your article that was published yesterday on Football Today, a terrific website with news and opinion about football. Time to think global when it comes to football model for Australia. The Australian football model unique though it may be, is fundamentally flawed and needs to be overhauled to be consistent with the with global football. There's a lot in it, right?
Course,
but what
yes.
I really, really paid a lot of attention to was this idea that an independent A-League in itself is not going to solve problems.
No, it won't.
Can
no.
you just explain
sure.
your point there around that?
Okay. Fundamentally, you've got a closed league system, and that has repercussions all across the line. The A-League was designed and built to attract the mainstream public, in effect. Think of it as Big Bash, but with a longer season, for instance. And it hasn't worked. And it hasn't worked because what they haven't understood is that the reasons why we have millions of kids playing football in Australia is because it's a kids' participation sport fundamentally. Okay. Always has been.
Mm.
Okay. Now, the problem is it hasn't replicated to top-tier football because there is no connection. And there's no connection because parents and people do not see it as an entertainment-grade product. For example, you had Townsend, the CEO of Sydney, in your studio
Danny,
a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, Danny, that's his first name, sorry. And he mentioned how growing up he played soccer, but his family would only ever go and see the rugby league as entertainment on the weekends. And the first time he ever went and played, when he saw an NSL game was when he actually played in it. Well, that's fundamentally what's happening at the moment. Mm. People will spend their money on what they value or class entertainment product, which is your Big Bash cricket. They've got swimming pools there now for kids to swim while they're watching the cricket. Sorry, but you know what I'm trying. You see what I'm trying to get at? Mm. So it's entertainment grade, and so they built the A-League on that premise. They think, oh, okay, let's make it snazzy it up, and we'll get the sports fans, not the football fans, which obviously they initially received, but the sports fan. When they had the clean air, obviously during those summer periods, we've talked about that before. Well, you did before with Mr. Howcroft as well. Mm. Now, fundamentally, unless you build football culture, Carlos, you're not going to fill stadiums. And unfortunately, it's a 2 to 3 generation exercise. The Japanese have understood that with their 100-year plan, but we haven't. We've taken a massive, massive shortcut. So we've built this A-League product, an expensive product, in colosseums for stadiums in the first place. We've built this administrative layer on top of that with exorbitant salaries for which the game cannot afford. Our players at the top tier, we're paying them, in my opinion, more than the code can actually afford at this current stage in our cultural evolution of football. With me?
Mm.
So in other words, we've taken this massive shortcut thinking we'll attract the mainstream. So let's create an AFL-type-esque administration structure because it's going to explode. We've woken the giant. No, you've got to build culture. It takes generations. And it happens from club football. And you said that before with Jonathan. Clubs, getting people in family-centric football clubs. You've got to build a culture from ground up. You just can't be. You can't cheat. You can't shortcut it. And that's a fundamental flaw we've done. So by giving the A-League to the A-League owners, for instance, and then recapitalising, we're just kicking the can down the road because we've missed it. You need to open up the entire football edifice. You've got to have promotional legation. You've got to have a second division. It's got to be linked to stadium facilities. We've got to scale back the A-League to play in affordable boutique stadiums. But guess what? We've never built them. What do we got? We spent 4 years at South Melbourne fighting the government and fighting other codes to protect a football asset in which we locked away now for 40 years on 40-year lease. That's a soccer football asset for the next 40 years. Unless we do more of these boutique stadiums across Victoria and Australia for the next generation, 3,000, 5,000. And as we grow in population and popularity, we upgrade. The footprint is there, then we just upgrade and upgrade. That's what's happened across the planet.
You talk about migrating the code to a global standard. Can you talk about talk about what that means?
Yeah. The key tenets of the FIFA statute are promotion by merit. There's a transfer fee system. I don't know what we were thinking in designing this unique model in Australia that obviously I think after 40 years people can see now it just doesn't work. You need to have transfer fees. You need to help fund football down the line. What we've done now is the high junior fee structure that we have in Australia is because of the unique modelling that we've created. It has repercussions, unforeseen repercussions, unfortunately. They had good intentions, no doubt, but it's had unforeseen detrimental repercussions across the whole game. Junior fees, youth development. The A-League youth system, which was designed and rolled out in 2008, has had repercussions on our international competitiveness across our youth teams, no doubt. And so unless we have kids playing senior football at 16, 17, 18 and training with senior men, we're not going to create the standard players that we want. Corralling them in youth systems until they're 19, 20, 21, then spitting them out, it's a flawed model. They need to be loaned out to second division teams or third division teams like they do around the planet, playing and training with senior men, playing for points, playing for promotion, playing for relegation, because we haven't built the culture to teach these children what it's really all about. They're all just developing. Developing for what? For the World Cup. And then again, they're just developing for the next World Cup. Seriously, we've got to get back to the core tenets of football, and that's what I mean by global standard. Promotion, relegation, linked tiers, club culture from the entire 700 clubs that we have across Australia.
The transfer system is an interesting one. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk by FIFPro to completely dismantle the transfer system around the world. Don't know how far down the track they are with that. Obviously, the PFA played a big part in dismantling the transfer system in Australia. You're now an authentic body that's talking to the FFA, of course, talking to other stakeholders with this next stage of Congress. What's the appetite been like across the board when you discuss the thing about the point of reintroducing transfer fees in Australia?
First thing is, with change, people need to understand that there's an acclimatisation process, firstly. I mean, Jonathan mentioned before about evolution, revolution, so it's an evolution process. But more importantly, I call it a acclimatization process. It takes time, and you've got to start talking to people and explain to people. And in time, people understand that. If you had said to people 12 months ago, Carlos, that we'll be here designing and talking about a second division with promotional relegation and linkages and having people on Fox and people like all the mainstream journos in our game in code agreeing, understanding the need for that change, you wouldn't believe me. But it's an acclimatization process, and that's what we're doing as well. So the transfer system, the linked tiers, the promotional negation, it's going to happen. It's definitely going to happen because there is no other option for us as a game. So the stakeholders, I think, are finally understanding that we need to actually reform the game. And it starts with the federations as well. So bit by bit by bit, they'll understand what's required to be done. And so we need to get away from this unique model concept. It has unforeseen repercussions, in many ways detrimental. One bugbear that I have, for example, is the visa system. Every state, every federation in Australia has got a different visa, different point system. Our A-League has, you know, 5 visa players. We've got 2 in the NPL. Asian Federation has 3+1. Oh, please. It's not rocket science. We need a uniform process around visa players to encourage the development of players, for instance, Australian players. So it's a lot of things we need to kind of cover. But first thing is first, Carlos. We need to accept that we've made a mistake, firstly. Secondly, the solution is actually really, really easy. It's the migration process from the realization to the solution. That's the complex part, the migration process. Because it's what stream do you do first? When you design your radio station, you get to determine what do you do first? Okay, we've got to rent the premises first, we've got to find the personnel, buy the equipment, software. What goes first? What goes second? So that linear project plan is the complicated part, for instance. And we need people that are experienced in transformational work doing that piece, for instance.
And one more thing, I think we've got to redefine what mainstream Australia really is. The fact that people are suggesting that the football people aren't part of mainstream Australia, well, go to the Gap Football Club in in Queensland. Go to people, Ashburton yeah. Football Club
Correct.
In Melbourne. Yeah. Go to the big football clubs all yeah. around Australia and then talk to me about what you see.
Yeah.
That is mainstream Australia. And the idea that mainstream, that football is not part of mainstream Australia is ignorant.
Yeah.
And it shows a lack of understanding of where we are as a sport and also in the demographics of Australia.
You nailed it. Mm. This is the key plank. We've built a unique system, not for football people, but for the so-called mainstream. Now, you touched the point before also about the ethnicity angle with clubs. This is with Jonathan. I want to answer something there clearly. People might not be aware that the Collingwood Football Club, in its inception, was a Catholic-Irish enclave club. And if you were not Catholic or Irish, you couldn't play for them. Boston Celtic, basketball team in the US. Unless you had freckles, you were Irish and Catholic. You couldn't play basketball for that particular team. Now, clubs are formed across the planet by particular groups or migrant groups or whatever. Brisbane Roar was celebrating its Dutch heritage last year. Melbourne Victory had bagpipes. When they formed the Melbourne Hearts, what other club in the planet is called Hearts? I was in Glasgow 2 years ago with George Campbell and we went and saw Hearts play Motherwell. Now, the demographic they were trying to track there was obviously the Anglo-Celtic Scottish heritage group. Well, every club has that. Eventually, they morph into the culture of the country that they're at. So people got to get over that. So the clubs that were in the NSL, the clubs that were designed in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, they've morphed now into clubs. And so it just staggers me. But they're football people, and we need to build the football model for football people. Now, if an AFL family wants to come and watch a game, great. But this is why we need to build a culture of football, which is promotion relegation, which is linked tiers. I mean, I'm so pleased to see Queensland move to a promotion relegation system this year, obviously. And so that's part of building the culture for it.
Absolutely, Tom. Mate, it's been enthralling talking to you. I loved your article yesterday on Football Today. If anyone out there has not read Tom's article on Football Today, get on to footballtoday.com.au and you'll be able to have a read of that. Very insightful. And by the way, on behalf of FNR, I want to thank you for becoming a member of FNR last week.
Yes, yes. Look, this is something that talk, as like most things, is very, very cheap. We need to put our money where our mouth is as well. And I'd like to implore your listeners that to have a fully dedicated football radio show at our fingertips is critical for the game. We need to also be part of and help and promote and push that. So good luck, guys, and great job. Well done. Commendable.
Thanks, Tom. And that's a great segue to our promotion for the FNR membership. Just get to footballnationradio.com, click on the membership link, and you can become part of the voice of football in this country. And it's growing and growing all the time. And with the work of the AAFC and Tom and Rabbi Crayham, the AAFC, it is now loud and clear, the voice, and it's getting bigger and bigger. But, Tom, thanks for joining us today. It's a great pleasure having you in the studio.
Pleasure. It's an honour. Thank you, guys.
Good stuff. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to go up to Sydney and talk to Adam Santa Rosa about the NPL in New South Wales here on Football Extra here on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Football Extra with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR Football Nation Radio.
24/7. This is FNR Football Nation's radio, broadcasting live across Australia and live across the world. This is Football Extra, the NPL edition. Just had a fantastic chat with former chairman of the AAFC, doing some wonderful work there, Tom Callis. And of course, we will also bring you up to date with all the road shows and everything else that the AAFC are doing around the country at the moment. Some fine work there. Of course, with thanks to our great friends at Itel, you can win a premium packed Itel Colomba. Along with Itel's new improved Greek kouladakia, the egg twist biscuit. If you're one of our best callers on any of our live shows today, 03-99-44-99-99, 03-99-44-99-99 is the talkback number. You can join in the conversation anytime today. Of course, our SMS number is 0428-933-345. And also you can join the conversation on Twitter at FNR _radio. And of course, do what Tom did. He joined up as a member member of FNR. That's right, you can be part of a huge voice of football in Australia by becoming a member of FNR today. If you love the game and you love FNR's uncompromised and passionate whole-of-game coverage, you can become a member by going to footballnationradio.com and clicking on the Become a Member link. Be a voice of football. Become an FNR member today. And Tom wants it to be really strong. He wants everyone in football to be an FNR member so we have a strong, strong voice throughout Australia. We will soon go up to Ben Homer from Northern New South Wales NPL, talk about the preview of round one. But first, let's go to Sydney and talk to Adam Santarosa to talk to us about all things round one of the NPL in New South Wales on the weekend. Good morning to you, Adam.
Good morning, Carlos.
Yeah, so really great to have you on the line. And I was really, really interested in some of the results on the weekend. Of course, Manly and RPO, it's a replay of the grand final last season where Manly prevailed. But RPO got a little bit of revenge on the weekend.
Yeah, this was a pretty good game, actually. Probably the pick of the round. And it just shows that both these teams are going to be back up the top this year and fighting for that trophy again. RPO got a bit of revenge on grand final day, winning 2-1 there at Cromer Park. And look, it was Sean Simmons' goal that was the difference. Manly sort of controlled things early, got an early goal. Actually had a penalty. Missed RPO. Dylan Mitchell, who was the hero in that penalty shootout, saved again from the spot. So he just seems to be going from strength to strength. But it was Sean Simmons the difference in the end. And look, he was probably the player of the year last year in the NPL New South Wales. And he started 2018 off in a similar vein by getting the winner. So RPO pretty happy.
Adam, did you get an indication about how strong the teams are this season? Are they just continuing on with their exploits from last year? I mean, RPO winning the league, Manly winning the grand final. Do you see them as almost the favourites again this season?
Yeah, look, I think both teams, you know, look at them on paper. They've added, you know, one or two players, but essentially they are the same team as last year. And that's what you saw on Saturday night. They sort of just hit their stride straight away, whereas some of the other teams that have recruited quite heavily, they, you know, particularly the Wollongong Wolves and Blacktown, which is the game I called, they, both of those sides were really a little bit sloppy, and you could see the combinations needing to take a little bit of time, whereas Manly and RPO were just in the groove straight away. So I think you'll find they'll start well to the season, and I think that'll be the trend this season. Both will be right up there, because looking at their squads, I mean, the reason they haven't recruited is because they've got pretty good squads. They've got the quality there. So both will be up there, certainly.
And, of course, the game that you covered was the Wollongong Wolves and Blacktown. There was a nil-all in the end, but it's probably, from all reports, as exciting a nil-all draw as you'd get. And also, apparently, the catch-the-wolf ritual before the game really was very exciting for a lot of people.
Yeah, the wolf chase.
I didn't know what it was called. I just saw it on Facebook or something. It was actually quite funny. Do they do it before every game, do they, at Wollongong?
They do it at halftime in every game. I'd heard a lot about it. It was actually the first time I'd actually witnessed it. So they basically have the mascot, the wolf, and they get a heap of kids out on the field, and you actually win $20 if you catch the wolf. So
really?
It's pretty exciting, and the kids love it. It's like the football field's packed with kids of all ages, and off you go, try to catch the wolf, and it's pretty entertaining. I put something on Twitter after the game, and I basically said, you know, Wollongong needs to be in the A-League. We need the wolf chase in the A-League. a lot of people thought I was actually endorsing the bid, but it was purely a bit tongue-in-cheek. But, yeah, it's first time I've seen it live, and, yeah, it's a heap of fun. And one of the better halftime entertainment I've seen. But, look, the game itself was pretty entertaining. You know, plenty of chances from both sides. And look, probably it could have been, you know, 3-3, the amount of chances there were. But, you know, as I said before, they're a little bit sloppy. That might be a little bit harsh. But just a few combinations starting, you know, taking a little bit of time to bed themselves down. Wollongong Wolves had about 5 new faces for them. So you can see the combinations forming. And Quibby Fowler, who's a new recruit for them, was a standout for mine, only played 45 minutes. So he's trying to get you know, some runs in his legs. And Takuya Nozawa, who's a new signing, formerly of Kashima Antlers, you can really see his potential as well. He seemed to struggle as the game went on. It was 27 degrees down there in Wollongong, so it wasn't, I guess, ideal conditions for a new recruit. But you could certainly see that he was... the more the game went on, he sort of tired. But from what we saw, he's showing some good signs. And then for Blacktown, I mean, pretty similar squad to what we've seen in recent years. But they've added some real quality. I mean, Yanni Spyrakis was added to the back line. He was probably the player of the match for me. Mitchell Marlier was great again, coming back from the A-League. He spent a little bit of time with Perth Glory. But you look at their squad on paper, and they had Devontae Clute on the bench, Zach Cancross, who is their club captain, couldn't get a start, and Danny Choi wasn't in the match day squad because he's still coming back from injury. So you look at that and you think, you know, that's why I had Blackstown at the top, purely because, you know, they've got that at their disposal, and you think about what they have on the bench. And I was really impressed too. Mason Verzi, a youngster, came off the bench, and it just shows again the production line that Blackstown have. They just seem to find these talents year after year from their youth league. So both of those sides, I think, are ones to watch this year as well.
And the other game that was really interesting is the derby that hadn't been played for a while because Marconi's been in the lower leagues, but they've been promoted this year. Obviously, 1-0 winners over Sydney United. Of course, Sydney United coached by Jason Kallina. And Sean Rooney was really the difference in this game, scoring the only goal of the game for Marconi.
Yeah, it took just, I think, 4 minutes for Marconi to open their account. So they got an early goal through Sean Rooney. And look, Sydney United were a little bit unlucky. It was, you know, they had a heap of chances and probably deserved a point out of this game, as much as, I guess, Marconi fans won't appreciate that, but they had a few opportunities. They hit the woodwork as well. Pani Nikas is really their star. So they were a little unlucky. I mean, in the end, the result went to Marconi, but I think Sydney United showed enough that, you know, they're going to improve this year. Pani Nikas again, Chris Payne were in everything for them. So they've got the quality. It was just a little bit of luck betrayed them on Saturday night. But I think the story was Marconi. Great to see them get a win. And they had a really big crowd out there at Marconi Stadium too on Saturday night. So a lot of the fans have come back. Now they're back in the NPL New South Wales Men's One. And you couldn't ask for much more. A local derby against what is probably your biggest rival in Sydney United to get 3 points. They were all pretty happy out there on Saturday night.
Yeah, great. The bistro would have been, you know, pumping afterwards. And you know all about that, wouldn't you, Adam? The bistro there at Marconi?
Oh, I think the Graffa would have been pumping as well with 3 points. But, you know, I mentioned last week on the show, I mean, I grew up going out to Marconi games and that was one that you would circle when the fixtures came out. So it's just great to see them, you know, start well and the crowds come back. Because, yeah, that's what impressed me. It was a pretty big crowd out there at Marconi. So hopefully that continues. And they've got a couple of big games coming up. They play Apia in a couple of weeks. So wow. I think there'll be a big one out there.
Jeremy Cox, tell us about this kid. Scored a hat-trick in the first game for Sydney FC against Harkawa. Mate, it's not a bad way to start the season with a hat-trick.
Yeah, it was certainly an eye-catching display. I mean, he's been with the Sutherland Sharks for the last, I guess, 2-3 years and hasn't really featured too much for them. They did have a young squad and he had his opportunities, but didn't really, I guess, show too much with all due respect in the last couple of years. And now he's come into the Sydney mix. And I thought, you know, when I gave my preview last week, I sort of highlighted Hassan Jallo and Luke Ivanovic as the strikers that would be great pickups for Sydney. But look, Jeremy Cox has blown that out of the water with a hat-trick on the opening day. And look, every goal he took brilliantly, like he's finishing with first class. So I know a little bit about him. I mean, he's been sort of played more as a wide role with Sutherland, whereas Sydney now play him through the middle as sort of a, not a target man, but a number nine. And look, you know, feed him and he will score, I think is the mantra at the moment. You know, I think he had 3 chances for 3 goals. So, yeah, he's one to watch. And those that don't know too much about him, I think you're going to learn a thing or two this year because he started pretty well. And from the talk out of Sydney too is that, you know, a lot of people were saying, oh, we didn't expect it from Jeremy. And they were like, no, he's a real talent and, you know, he's one to watch. So certainly one to watch this year.
And Sydney FC, a lot of the youngsters playing for that team, obviously, against Harkawa, who I believe were going to be quite competitive this year. That's a pretty good win for them, for the kids.
Yeah, it was a great performance too. And it was, I guess, it was a change from last year. I mean, they were very consistent over the 90 minutes. You know, young sides do have those phases where, you know, they'll switch off or fade out of a game and the result can escape them. But they just put their foot to the throat last week. Once they got the lead, you know, they just went to that next level. And you can see Robbie Stanton has probably drilled that in them. He's probably a little bit upset. Even in the National Youth League this year, a couple of times they let good performances go away and they let leads dissipate. So this time they were like, nah, we're gonna hold on to this one. And yeah, it was a good win, and it's sort of a statement to the competition because a lot of it, you know, not much is expected of them being a young side. They want to show, look, we're good enough to play at this level. We want success at this level, and that's a good sign. But look, for Hakoa, I thought they'd struggle this year, given their recruitment, and actually had them down near the bottom. And I think that was a sign of their season. I think they're going to struggle this year on that performance.
Now, Sydney Olympic, obviously, on debut, their coach, Abbasad, had a win 2-1 against Bonnyrigg White Eagles. Both sides sort of mid-table last year. What sort of performance? What did you gauge by that game?
Yeah, the jury's still out a little bit on these two, purely because they've got a heap of new faces, new coaches as well. Abbasad obviously taking over Sydney Olympic. I thought they were going to start really slow this year, Sydney Olympic. You know, changing your manager a week out from the season, certainly not ideal. But look, Abbasad has seemed to get things ticking pretty well and getting a win there over Sydney Olympic and over Bonnyrigg. And I thought the White Eagles were a bit unfortunate. I mean, they hit the post a couple of times. They had a goal disallowed. You could make the argument maybe they were the better team across the 90 minutes. But look, Sydney Olympic took their chances. That's the story of the game. Bonnyrigg, yes, mid-table last year. They've been one of the most successful teams in the last sort of decade in the NPL. And last year was very different. They really struggled with injury. But I sort of had the mid-table again this year, and I think from what I saw on Sunday, I think that's going to be wrong. I think they'll be further up the table and really competitive with the top teams and on the verge of the finals because good on paper, and from what I saw on Sunday, I think they're going to be good again.
And, of course, Adam, the last game for the weekend was Rochdale, City Suns versus Sunderland Sharks. It was a 1-0 win by Rochdale. What did you see in that game? Did you get any inkling at all about how these teams are going to go this season?
Yeah, Rochdale, I wrote them off last week. I said they'd miss the finals, and a few of their fans let me know on Twitter how wrong that prediction was. And look, on Sunday, they did a good job of that as well. I thought they were really good on Sunday. I mean, they finished third last year, lost a penalty shootout in the preliminary finals, so they were that close to a grand final appearance. And they'd be burning it at that, and it would get showed on Sunday. They were very dominant. They only won 1-0, but it could have been a lot more. They were very, very fortunate. Ryan Norville did a great job, the Sharks keeper, in keeping it just the one goal. A good start for them. Alex Chanak scored a goal of the week for the NPL men's one. It was something special, like a 30-yard long ranger. So a good way to start the year with something special like that. So, I saw enough to see. Look, I'm tipping everyone to make the finals today, but it's just so early that, it's hard to know until, I guess, 5-6 rounds in. You know, some teams come in full fitness and they look really sharp, and then everyone else's fitness catches up, and then you get a true test of where they're at. But, yeah, Rochdale going to be there again. As I said, the likes of Marconi, Blacktown, Sydney United, it's going to be one hell of a season. And, you know, everyone you talk to around the ground in the NPL, New South Wales, are like, we don't know who's going to win it this year because you look at every squad and it's strong, and that's great. And I just hope, you know, the games this weekend have been high quality, and just hope that continues.
Well, Adam, I hope you're not going to start sitting on the fence because of the abuse you get on social media. You've got to be more resilient than that, okay? You're a young commentator. It's got to be more resilient than that. But it's a really fantastic, comprehensive wrap of the weekend's games, mate. I'm actually really looking forward to the games this weekend. Just have you got a game of the week that you're particularly looking forward to this weekend?
Yeah, it's probably both our live streams are very good this week. So Saturday night, we'll be live streaming Sydney United 58, Blacktown City, out there at Sydney United Sports Centre. So that will be a quality game. And also, probably the match of the round, Apia Leichhardt and Sydney Olympic. I'm doing that game at Lambert Park on Sunday afternoon from 4:15. So if you want to tune in, NPL New South Wales on the Facebook. And yeah, we were really blown away at some of the figures we got. Round one, obviously, there wasn't too much A-League on last weekend. So I think we got a lot of football fans tuning in, and hopefully they come back this week because there's two big games there.
Good on you, mate. Thanks for your wrap this week. Look forward to speaking to you again next week.
No worries, Carlos.
Good on you, mate. That's Adam Santa Rosa, football commentator up there in New South Wales, talking about the NPL New South Wales. Let's take a short break. And after the break, we're going to go up to Northern New South Wales and speak to Benjamin Homer about the round one of the Northern New South Wales NPL coming up this weekend. This is Football Extra, the NPL edition here on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Football Extra with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Football 24/7. This is FNR Football Nation Radio, broadcasting around Australia live and around the world live. And it is Football Extra here, the NPL edition. And we go straight up to Northern New South Wales and speak to football commentator up there, Benjamin Homer, joining us this morning. Good morning to you, Ben.
Morning, Carlos. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really, really well. I've been really excited about the Northern New South Wales NPL starting this weekend. And we had a bit of a boil over with Western winning the Heritage Cup in the pre-season. Was that expected?
Well, they were in a very tough pool, Western, in that Heritage Cup. They were in the pool with Edgeworth. Lake Macquarie were also in that pool as well, another NPL side. So the three NPL sides in the one pool, Edgeworth were the favourites to get out of it, and it was Western who beat all of the sides in the group and made it through to the final. Adamstown were in the other pool, another very famous club here from northern New South Wales. They had a fairly easy draw, to be honest. But they performed well in the final against Western. It was a good nil all draw, as good a nil all draw that I've watched. I know sometimes you get a nil all draw and it's quite boring, but it was end to end. Both sides created chances, and in the end, it was Western who won on a penalty shootout. So obviously, those matches are only 30-minute halves, so it's a bit hard to get a full gauge. But Western and Adamstown both looked all right. Western especially with last year. They finished dead last. They won one match all season. And I really feel this year they've brought in Q Yallians at the back just to strengthen things and a couple of experienced players, including Josh McGuire as well. So I think they're going to be better for that. And I'm tipping them to have a good season.
Should we worry about Edgeworth there, Ben? Because obviously they lost the grand final to Lambton Jaffers last season. They haven't done so well in this Heritage Cup. Is there any sense of worry there?
Well, Edgeworth had a few of their top players out, so you could use that as potentially an excuse for poor performances. The other thing is the 60-minute matches, and one of my co-commentators, Damien Smith, he was chatting to Damien Zane, the Edgeworth coach, and Zane was sort of saying that it's hard with a 60-minute match to sort of plan it as though it is a 90-minute match, because if you go behind early, you've pretty much got to try and score to get back in the match. Whereas in a 90-minute match, it's a little bit more time for you to sort of get into the match and work your way into that particular contest. So that's where I feel that that the Eagles will have more of an advantage this weekend playing over the full 90 minutes. So I wouldn't think it's too much of an issue for them, those poor performances last weekend. But this weekend, it doesn't get much more difficult for them. They're playing Lambton Jaffers.
Now, Benjamin, we don't have a lot of time, mate, and I want to spend more time with you next Wednesday reviewing the first round, so we'll certainly have a lot of time to go through it. But I want to talk about the Coalfields Derby. Is that the only derby that's called the Coalfields Derby throughout the world?
Well, I don't know of any other derby throughout the world that's called the Coalfields Derby, but there might be somewhere. It's also been dubbed, last year it was dubbed the El Clasico. So I quite like that one. But last year it was very much a one-sided affair because Maitland had such a strong side and Western were very weak. So this year I'm tipping a really, really close contest on Saturday night. It's at 7 p.m. up at Maitland, and they're hoping to get a big crowd in the Magpies. So I'm really hoping they get a big crowd, a lot of people from Western come over, and they can create a huge, entertaining atmosphere at Cook Square Park.
Fantastic. And, of course, the games this weekend, do you have the list of games? I think, go ahead, mate. Just tell us what the list of games are.
Yeah, so Saturday, the Newcastle Jets youth take on Adamstown Rosebud. That's 2:30 at Adamstown Oval on Saturday. I think that'll be tight. I'm tipping the Jets just to get over the line there. Adamstown's in a rebuilding phase. They've got a lot of new players, so I think the Jets will get the cookies there. The second match, which is actually the match of the round, it's going to be live on Bar TV Sports on YouTube, so you can check that out. I won't be calling this weekend because I'm away, but the boys will be there, Damien Smith and Chris Turner. I think I'm tipping a draw just because Lambton have had a few issues. Joe Wheelhouse is not expected to play and Edgeworth weren't at their best last weekend. So I'm going a draw in that one. 6 p.m. Hamilton Olympic playing Charlestown City Blues at Darling Street Oval. That's a really tough one to pick, and I think I'm just leaning towards the home side, Hamilton, at the moment, but that one could go either way. Maitland and Western, just to Maitland. I think Maitland in a tight one. And the only Sunday match of round one, Lake Macquarie Roosters taking on Broadmeadow Magic. And you can't go past Broadmeadow Magic with the with Ruben Zadkovic bringing in a host of new players, and they're looking strong again in 2018.
Good stuff, Ben. We'll get a wrap of all those games from you next Wednesday, but thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Carlos.
Good on you, mate. That's Benjamin Homer, the commentator up there for Northern New South Wales NPL starting this weekend. That brings an end to Football Extra for today. You can podcast the show on iTunes and SoundCloud. So until this time tomorrow, may you have a fantastic day in football.
Football Extra with Carlos Alberto Diego and Luis Taffer on FNR, Football Nation Radio.